welcome to a new episode of DevSecOps Talks with me, Matthias.
Andrei.
And Julian.
Woohoo!
Julian, you got to work more on that.
Yeah, you need.
Julian, more punch.
Julian, you had the topic, right? You had something.
Yeah, so there is this company that released what they call the first AI software engineer.
What is that?
So basically,
what happened yesterday about that?
It has blown up. I think there is a lot of clash back, developer are fighting that back and saying it's not good or anything. I didn't try it. I just saw the advertisement that they put out.
Okay.
So the idea is that you have like some kind of development environment. You have a terminal, you have a browser, you have a code editor, and you interact with the chatbot or like the model through chat, and it automatically find and correct and debug and automatically insert like print statement all over your code so you can understand better what the code is doing and can fix errors and everything. And it sounds very, very promising. I think the devil's in the details, and we're going to see more of that evolution. And there are some benchmarks that they say, oh, we are solving 13% of the GitHub issue for a project automatically, which sounds great, but that means there's also like 87% that are still lingering. I mean, it's not bad. It's a step into automation. I'm curious to see concretely how long it took the model to fix those issues. You know, because my big issue with that is that even though you use AI, you put a prompt, and then you just wait. You know what I mean? It's not really instant, so you kind of lose the flow, and you might be tempted to do something else and then come back. And context switching is really a productivity killer. And so, like, I don't know. People think that, oh, they're going to replace the job of software engineer. I'm really not convinced about that. And I would like to know, what do you think? Like, where this is going?
But are you saying you add this to your Git repo and it goes through your code and then it adds thing to your code and to make it more readable and detect errors in loops or whatever and then patches them?
I think it's further than that. Like, you literally tell it to do stuff. Like,
oh, okay.
It modifies the code. It implements, like, let's say you call an URL and you say, make it a retry logic, you know? Yeah. And the model just write the code and test. And it uses the browser to browse the documentation to feed into the model. So you know, it's much more advanced than just a little bit. It's not a CLI tool. It's kind of like a full-blown environment. It seems like it.
Are you talking about Cognition AI?
That rings a bell, the company, yes.
Because you're saying like there is a company that announced something, but I don't tell you the name. But
it's called Devin.
Devin, yes. So there is a company called Cognition AI. I have a couple of articles here. I will add the links to the show notes. So the company called Cognition AI, and they claim that they got a breakthrough in reasoning. So what you have, like with the tools like GitHub Copilot AI.
Yeah,
is that it's assistant. And here they say they took it to a next level. And it's not assistant, it's actually like a worker that you work with.
Ooh.
Remember our discussion about Amazon Code Catalysis and solving the issues there? Here they're saying they actually took it in another level. We basically give it a project. They tell it like, well, build me a website that would that will give information about all vet clinics in this city. And that thing will go research, build the website, ask for the context, how to edit it. So it actually does the whole thing for you, as you would complicate as with a worker.
So,
and they say that they have like a huge context window. And in articles, the people who tried it, they say it actually keeps the context window for very, very long. Like the your typical models, they lose context quite quickly. Even if they have a very big context window, they still lose it. And that thing was on point for a long time. So it's very, very interesting to see. I'm not sure if it's available for everyone. They just emerged from stealth this week. And this week being, we are recording on 14th of March.
Wow. So you can send them a project, build me this API that...
Kinda.
Yeah, so kind of.
It's interesting. So I guess we're going to see a lot of breakthroughs in the reasoning and how it goes. Actually, there is another thing that I seen recently, and I just need to remember how it was called. I think it's RPCD AI. I'm just going to double check that. RPCD.AI, which is, if I could spell it.
Julian, are you looking at the other jobs now? You're kind of zooming out now that I can see you, but I'm looking at you, and you're like, it feels like you're like, oh, zooming out. Maybe that.
What makes you say that? I'm not I'm never looking for job full time, but I always keep an eye on the market. But
I thought about this software. I mean, now if they can start building application by themselves. Isn't maybe a concern for me is that becomes the standard how you build things, right? What's the standard of way you're building application, right? Today it's up to the developer to build it, but maybe someday it would be if everybody using the same platform, that would be the standard way. That would be like how you construct code components.
Probably the idea here is really to like. It lowered the bar for people to actually create things. Yeah. It doesn't mean those things are good or efficient or even ethical. We've been in the industry of automating stuff, so it makes sense that we start automating our own job. But I look around and I was like, okay, you know, I'm not a mechanic, so I can't probably fix a car. But if I had an AI... it would be probably like I would be able to fix much more than if I were just me and YouTube tutorial. Yeah. So this is what I see is more like, some little app, some little website, some design thing, sure. Building an entire architecture, maybe, you know, if it's standard enough. But then, you know, how do you maintain that? How do you change things? And more interestingly, when you make a change and you want to deploy and that deployment breaks, like, what do you do? And who do you blame? Who is responsible?
Give you a different example, which is more close to home. So LLMs, they learn on examples. And we have a lot of example code on the web, like on a GitHub, right? But then when you build something complex, so for instance, you do AWS organization, you will not find a lot of examples of ready-to-use AWS organizations on the web.
No.
It's just not present. It's usually company internal stuff, and you would need to find access to that. So if you're dealing with something that requires obscure data, if you're doing something like a, for instance, if you do a very custom integrations between software, I think like those are hard to automate, at least at this point, based on the way how LLMs are trained, because they're basically regurgitating what they saw before. If they haven't seen it before, they don't have capability to generate something there, like come up with it, like connect the dots. So it will take a couple of more breakthroughs in reasoning. That's what Cognitive AI claims they did. It's hard to tell because it just came out of stealth. Another thing that I saw last week is upcd.com. I finally found it. And what those folks are doing is actually very much along what we're discussing here. Infrastructure is code.
Yeah.
But with the AI. And their approach is they take the application code and they generate infrastructure based on application code itself. So instead of writing the spec, they say, all right, you're calling DynamoDB.
Yeah.
We're going to generate DynamoDB for you. I think it's a very interesting approach. I haven't tried them. I just saw them on LinkedIn, and they're very, very early stage, but I would give it a try and see how it goes, because it's like, for instance, for the app, like to deploy actual application, for instance, you want to deploy to ECS, and you don't do all of the remaining part because you still need to have a network, so you need to build a VPC with all the ingress, egress rules, blah, 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 blah. You need to have IAM for that. But if you deploy an application, why not? So I'm not sure how you're going to tell it where you're going to deploy, because that's the whole thing how we deploy software today, right? You just write the code and then it's packaged somehow. Yeah. So it would be just SCP copy to the VPS, virtual private server. And people totally do it today.
Yeah.
Or you could package that, or you could push it to Heroku, and then Heroku does it magic. You have no idea what's going on. Or you package that in the container. So there are many ways it can take, and I don't know how that thing goes about it. Maybe you use some kind of annotations. But I like the data.
Yeah, we are in a very interesting time for those, because, you know, there is a lot of people that are trying those things, and It tells them nothing. Like Heroku, they probably don't know what it is. Like container, never heard of it. Or you know. And so the first thing that's going to work, that's what they're going to stick with. Yes. And I'm pretty sure there's going to be a renewal of older technology that have tons and years of documentation behind them that they've been spread all over. Like yesterday, we talked about it with Matthias, and there was someone who was mentoring a junior. And the junior had to write a config for the web server. And he wrote it for Apache web server, which is like, I haven't heard even the name in a while. Right. And the reason he did that was really because that's the only config the model could generate. And so this is, we laugh about it, but I'm pretty sure soon you're gonna see, you know, those technology from the 90s having a resurgence and become mainstream again, just because the model knows it and it gets things done. Whether it's secure, whether, you know, that's another question. But it will humble a lot of people, I'm sure.
I would say with the speed of the wolves, it's quite impressive. And I think in 2-3 years, the industry might look very different. If it keep evolving the way it evolves now, with the speed it evolves.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to keep in mind, this is very much for startups. Like, very few big companies even come close to that stuff. And if they do, they don't want to pay. Or, you know, it's a cost that comes on top of everything they already have. Yeah. So, you know, it's easier to change tech than to change people. We know that. So, It's a little bit interesting, the dynamic that's going to happen there. I think, I feel it's a little bit like 3D printing. You know, it's going to revolutionize the world. You're going to print everything at home. And then suddenly, you know, it takes 24 hours to print a piece that's not that big and it costs a lot and you have to clean it and everything. And people say, hey, I can just go to the store and get it now. And you understand a little bit of that situation. So there is that as well, where it's a hype cycle. We are full in it. You know, it's like no doubt about it. And model don't really know how to say, well, I have no idea, you know, or this does not exist.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or even I think this was written by a model or not. So, let's you know, there is plenty of things. It's like the YouTube has a problem with content creators, you know, like because now they put a lot of work and energy into creating content. Then those model download this and rebrand it and, you know, steal the content, and they can still make money with that. And how do you detect that? There is no, and so you're going to have creators going someplace where they are not, nobody steal from them.
Yeah.
I'm not as worried about creators, but I'm thinking what we could be doing as a practitioners to stay ahead, or at least to be informed and develop the necessary skills we would need later.
We assist the AI, as you said, if you can build like infrastructure. I mean, if you have application and it makes the YAML for infrastructure, that's something that we can look at and say, oh, you know what? You might want to redo this and add the keys or the password in this place instead, right? Just
exactly.
Like instruct the AI where it should point things and go. You just don't do SCP too easy to instance. Okay, no, this needs to be serverless. Okay, but this is a big application. This needs to be easy to whatever. I mean, it's guiding the AI to make the YAML for us.
I think it's exactly like that. I think people think AI is going to be a shortcut to do things. And I would say if they are just starting, use AI to learn and get faster. Or get better at something. Like if you want to learn Terraform, use AI to learn Terraform, not to write the Terraform code for you. And that's the big difference. It's really, as a practitioner, we should aim at filling our knowledge gap, not avoiding to, you know, have the knowledge and try to delegate everything to AI. I think that's my take.
Basically, last week I had a problem understanding something, so I used new services that I haven't been using before. Documentation is a little bit lacking, and they mention a couple of things there, and I cannot grasp the difference between them. Like, you know, you understand what the word means, but you don't understand the implication of using one instead of another. And I ended up going to a friend of mine asking, like, you already did it. What is the difference? And in 5 seconds, he sends me a response, which I understand comes from ChatGPT. It's clear. You can type as much so fast. But I'm like, why didn't I do that myself? And so, like, this old habits of going asking another human being, nothing wrong with that. But you might wait for another human being. Like going to Google and Googling Stack Overflow and finding nothing. Just you have to now change the way you wire it. And for the people coming into the workforce, will be easier because it will be an integral part of how they behave. So instead of today checking Stack Overflow, looking in the articles in Google, Elsa, ask the LLM, whatever you have access to explain it to you. And I think that's very powerful because they are very, very patient and you can ask more and more questions until you get it. Obviously, they could be a little bit misleading. You still have to do a research. But if you have just a gap, a little bit of gap that you need to fill, exactly as Julian said, so just think about it and use them as a teachers.
Exactly. I think that's the best way. The best use for AI is to actually gain skills and not delegate skills. It's very true. I think that brings the question, like, what do we need to learn instead of what can we, you know, make the AI do? I think this will pay off way more in terms, because suddenly, you know, let's say it takes 30 days to become kind of good at Terraform, but suddenly here it's like a week. So for the rest of the time, you could learn 4 times faster than someone who just do a course or something.
Yeah, I feel bad for people who create courses, because before that, yeah, there was a brutal industry, people stealing content from each other. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to become even harder. So I feel sorry for you guys.
But how much can the AI, you know, help you making using more standards as well? This with the code generating infra, you can also detect, right? Okay, but here they're using password, or it's like, oh, but the Amazon keys are in here, and then the AI instantly replaced them, stored them in a good location, and swapped, you know, enhanced the code to make it the better. To make it more secure, more robust. I mean, if you have that tool that generates a manifest for Amazon, I hope they're using TLS, right?
Mm.
And they're not like, some best practice would be in place as well. And that could be a good thing.
Okay, here is something else. So when we spoke together with Matthias about announcements from AWS and all the AI stuff they announced there, which Julian
missed,
skipped by disappearing, so, and not telling us where did it disappear.
Which country did you were in? You were in Thailand, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So we finally found out. That's good.
So if Julian is not in Sweden,
he's in Thailand. We know that.
You know where to check. Yeah.
Best time of the year to be in the sun.
Yeah, absolutely. I would go. Anyhow. I got really interested in those tools, and my company is Amazon partner, and we're getting tons of Amazon credits from them as part of the program for our internal research, for certifications, and for everything. So I have the credits to burn, and I just decided, okay, I'm going to use those tools. I've been using them. GitHub Copilot, I switched to Code Whisperer.
Okay,
and,
interesting.
I find it different, like the way it generates code is a little bit different, and like the comment driven development. I just write a comment and it fills like whatever it needs to be filled there. Works pretty well with it. You could also use it as a security scanner. So for instance, if you have GitHub Enterprise and you have GitHub Advanced Security, they give you their own static analysis code, static analysis tool called CodeQL. And you can configure Code Whisperer to analyze your code. And I find that the findings doesn't develop. And Code Whisperer gives you quite interesting suggestions how you can improve the code. And I'm saying that because this is tools available for us now, and we need to adapt them to understand what capabilities they give and how to harness those capabilities in the best way to so we could work faster, we could work more efficient. And then another thing that Code Whisperer gives you is, what do they call it? It's a way to actually customize the code it generates. So you could configure customizations, and you could provide the code examples to it, saying like, do it more like this, right? So, and as far as I understood, the Code Whisperer was trained on the Amazon internal code, which theoretically having a better quality comparing to average repository you find on a GitHub. So like, it's very good to working with Amazon APIs, for instance.
Yeah.
And in order to further my education, the best way to learn is to teach others. As you know, so I'm actually working on a talk to talk about all those tools, how you use them, how you set them up. So I'm going to be doing the next week, Amazon user group Las Palmas. I'm doing the workshop on Code Whisperer, but I'm using the Amazon's presentation. Like, they have a workshop that you could reuse. So I'm going to be using that one, but in parallel, I'm actually setting up the talk to how to use it, how to advance it. And when you use it every day, you actually start to notice the patterns, you start becoming better at it. And I think this is the best thing we could be doing now, is just to exposing ourselves to as many of those tools available and understanding the way
it works. Is Code Whisperer just analyzing your code, or is it like, as a Copilot, like the GitHub big chunk of code? Or is it just scanning your code and giving you patterns from what you have before?
Oh, it has it's pre-trained on something.
Yeah.
Right. So the Copilot is pre-trained on the GitHub source code available there. The Code Whisperer is also pre-trained on something. That's not as important. The important part is that they claim that you can configure it in a way that your code is not used for training.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I don't think is the case with a Copilot. I think you might be able to opt out in Copilot as well, but here, or you could use it on a company level and say, like for everyone who is within the company, you could train and then talk, but only for those people. So you could, like you have your own custom model, basically.
Yeah. And in that, I also want to say I'm sorry to all the people that are getting like Copilot examples from my code base. I'm really sorry. I'm getting better. I'm getting better.
That's the way to improve.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, like when we talk about deployment and everything, if you ask a model, like, how do I deploy my app, he's going to come up with an answer that's probably not the best.
I think I need to test this. I haven't tested it. I need to test this to see what it comes up with. It'd be really interesting.
Another good application here, like one is learning, right?
Yeah.
Another way is to use it as a rubber duck. Like a rubber duck. The rubber ducky that can talk back to you. Like you start to explain it, your problem, and ask for suggestions. And that comes up with suggestions. And maybe it gives you 10 suggestions. 9 of them are full bullshit. Oh, you already did it. Fine. Then 10th is also bullshit, but it triggers your thinking and saying, like, I might miss something there. It's not exactly what that thing said, but there might be something in that direction I missed. And this is very valuable. Something that could trigger your thinking. And so learning, rubber duck.
Exactly. So it's very much learning and inspiration. That's already quite a good deal. Yeah. Now, let's see how the price goes, because some service makes you pay per API call. And, you know, sometimes the bill can add up. So, but it's probably cheaper than, you know, hiring someone to review your stuff. So it's just another tool that is available, not so much as the holy grail that everybody is claiming to be.
Yeah,
for security, like there are big companies that does this static code analysis on your code, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably they are not using AI, or they didn't before, so there will be a lot of if and else, right? But now with Copilot and Code Whisperer, they can actually look at the code and see what it does and determine if it's secure or not.
I think it would be a great use case. You know, like, I'm planning to do things this way. Is that method compliance with ISO 27001, you know, even if you're not like 100% sure, it will let you get closer much faster than if you had to read the whole spec, which is like, honestly, I read part of it and I probably forgot already half because it's not the kind of thing you do every day.
It's going to be a breeze being like, consultant doing security checks on companies. You used to like ask the AI, like, hey, can you check the code base? Are they ISO 27? Oh, okay. The infrastructure on Amazon, can you check there are some issues here? And then you get it back, right?
Hey, you know, like 2017, I was working at a company and there was a ransomware attack.
Yeah.
And the way they got into the database is because of a misconfiguration.
Yeah.
So it was not something obvious, you know. It was, you know, not the latest version, but not an old one either. And it was like specific. It was very specific to something. Yeah. And sometimes hackers find those things for specific version of database, and they abuse that. And so those kind of things can probably, you know, I'm pretty sure we would have caught it if we just run that configuration through a model and say, hey, check if you see an inconsistency. We're trying to do this. This is the, this performance are important to us and those kind of things. So there is definitely great use case. And your mileage may vary for the answer very much.
One thing I forgot to mention that there is also, as for Copilot, as for Code Whisper, right, the plugin for CLI, where you can use it in CLI as an intelligent autocomplete. So it could generate your Bash.
Bash. Going off the Bash. Come on.
I'm not sure if this is part of the solution or part of the problem.
No, but like, for instance, AWS CLI, you always need to look up the flags.
Oh, yeah.
And that will suggest the flags as you go, which is super useful. And I've been thinking, those two, Lapsiri, what if we reach out to the guys behind it and see if we can get anyone from there to talk to us and ask questions? Because that might be interesting thing to discuss. Yeah.
There's also an interesting project, if you want to check out, it's called GPT Script. It's more like also something that you can actually define tasks, and those tasks get converted into command line and get executed. So you can improve or get a faster workflow. It's more like, okay, I have to do a SQL command there, parse that data to JQ and extract that. You know, it's more like you will get there.
Yeah.
If you have something that just like, poof, here's all the code, you know, fine tune that to your liking, that's a productivity boost in my.
Oh yeah. Piping. Yeah.
Yeah. If something can parse JSON and I don't have to write JQ, oh, that would be so good. Each time I cry. Each time I do JQ, I literally cry.
Yeah, so I know. These you know, DSL language, I'm thinking of, you know, Prometheus querying, or, you know, this kind of, you have to write SQL, but not the standard SQL, the SQL for that database. And you're like, why? Why on earth do I have to do that? And that's also something that can definitely, I could use help.
Because of precision, right? You get, like, when you use the DSL, getting precision, and you get what you want exactly.
Yeah.
If you would write it in a human speak, we don't understand each other all the time.
Mm-hmm. True.
There is no precision in the way we communicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most of the time, if you ask something, it's probably somebody else already, you know, ask the same question, so maybe the model has been trained on that and can probably help better.
Yeah.
So the quite interesting times. Interesting time. I think every time we talk about AI, honestly, I don't want to blow the hype, but this is evolving so fast. I think it's worthwhile to keep an eye on it and keep talking about it. It doesn't need to be 100%, but when it comes to infrastructure, I see the gap in something, and that's gonna help.
Yeah,
and I think we need the podcast to stay ahead of the curve.
Exactly.
But this podcast is going to the end.
Yes, so this one. Exactly. I know what we do.
Yeah,
we keep the name, but we change the site to devsectalks.ai.
.ai. Okay. Have a look for changes on the web page. And with that, this podcast is over. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you. Till next time. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the DevSecOps podcast with Matthias, Andre, and Julian. For more podcast and notes, go to the webpage devsecops.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
Before you press, let me show you a little bit.
Too late.
Let's do a quiet pause and then we start.